Good Thursday, everybody. Welcome into the Rundown here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe and Marquise Munson back at the Wholesale Inc. Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com, as we get you ready for the day here in America's Music City. Marquise, the thing that has been on my mind the last, 24 hours is, you know, we've talked about hub cities and the NHL and even the NBA. And I thought when this entire process started that at least one sport was going to be calling Las Vegas home. But it would appear that that is not going to be the case.
Yeah, that's kind of shocking to me. I actually thought it was going to be the NBA for sure. Like, I had a for sure thing that the NBA is going to play in Vegas. They already play Summer League in Vegas, so they already got a familiarity with, you know, everything in Vegas. But they didn't. They did a bubble, which the bubble's cool. Like, I think it's cool. I think it's they're in a prime location, you know, to where they can, you know, house all their players and do all these different things, but play multiple games. But I always thought, like, Vegas has been the top sports destination for everybody. And so I would assume that, you know, Vegas would have had, you know, one of these sports resume there. But unfortunately, we don't so far.
No, we do not. So first, before we get into why we believe that Vegas is not going to be a hub city, let's hear from ESPN's Emily Kaplan on the NHL eyeing Toronto and Edmonton.
As league sources tell me, the NHL is now focused on starting the season in two Canadian hub cities, likely Toronto and Edmonton. Now, this is a really big change from what we've been hearing all along. The NHL wanted to go to one American city and one Canadian city. Specifically, they were focused on Las Vegas. The NHL loves the luxury hotels that are right by T-Mobile Arena. They felt like they could create a really good bubble environment there. However, in recent days, the players in the league became spooked by the spike in coronavirus cases, not only in Nevada, but in several U.S. states, and now the focus is on Canada. Now, this is all subject to PA approval, and the union is scheduled to vote on a return-to-play format sometime later this week.
Emily Kaplan of ESPN on the process here, and that's the key, that the players still have to vote on it. And there's a lot of moving parts with all of this as they try and get the CBA finished. And that was stuff that was already ongoing when the pandemic started. So they have to get that figured out. But Edmonton and Toronto, so both hub cities in Canada. There was a time, Marquise, where we were talking to Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet, and he was saying that he didn't think Canada would be in it at all because of the government policies with COVID and basically closing the borders and all of that. Now they're going to have both cities. So that's a surprise. But I thought that Vegas was perfect, not only because they're growing so much as a pro sport city, but they have the resources. I mean, you could create an NHL bubble in Vegas. I mean, even if they didn't have two hub cities, you could do one hub city in Vegas and be fine with all the hotel space, arena space. I mean, that's the key in all of this. You know, for basketball, I mean, you can pretty much set up a practice court where you need it.
See, that's what I was going to say about the NHL is Vegas, how much rink access do they actually have outside of, you know, maybe putting one in T-Mobile Arena? Like, can they use
Well, they're definitely going to put one in T-Mobile Arena.
Yeah, so like, as far as, like, other acts, like, let's say, for example, when, like, using the NBA bubble, like, they have three different courts in the NBA bubble. So you have limited access to courts. So if a team's playing, then maybe a team plays the next day and they're practicing somewhere else in one of the other courts. But, or, you know, maybe when they broadcast seven games a day, they're broadcasting, you know, on three different courts instead of it being NCAA style to where you see the teams waiting to get on the court for the next game. You know, they have three different courts. So I wanted to know what the rink access was in Vegas. And I mean, outside of T-Mobile Arena, I don't know where you put other rinks at.
Well, they have a practice facility that is not on the strip, but it's not that far from the strip. So they do have a practice facility with two additional rinks, but you also have, like, Mandalay Bay has an arena, MGM has an arena, so you can set up an ice rink in those smaller arenas that are connected to hotels. I think that was what was so appealing by it, that they do have those resources that they could set all that stuff up. Even with the NBA, think about it. I mean, or at least some of the big hotels have arenas attached to them. So there's practice courts, and then you play your games at T-Mobile. But ultimately, because of the rise in cases in Nevada and the Vegas area, which is, I mean, if we're being honest, that's what's happening just about everywhere. Major cities as they reopen. I mean, we're obviously, you know, having issues with it here in Nashville. I mean, that's something they're going to run into. Orlando is still going to have the NBA as cases continue to go up. So I don't think there's really a perfect scenario, and that leads us all, you know, always back to the conversation of, okay, well, is this actually going to happen? Are they actually going to be able to resume, or is it just going to get too out of control where they can't?
Yeah, see, that's the one thing that worries me, because when you go back to what Elliot said about Canada and, you know, their government and not allowing a lot of this stuff to happen because of the virus, I wonder, look, if the government just says, okay, look, we're not doing sports here in Canada at all, do they go back to all the hub cities that they turned down? Do they go back to the Vegases and the Columbuses of the world? Or do they just say, you know what, like, we're just going to cancel it because we're not going to ship our players to Vegas because clearly, we're taking them out for a reason because of the spikes in Nevada. And you know, we seen a video of, you know, a lot of people at a casino all at once, and yeah, and you know how much effect that can have on, you know, the Vegas becoming a hub city. And you know, a couple weeks later, now we're talking about Vegas not being in the conversation. So I wonder if Canada just says, look, we're not capable of doing this, if their government just throws their hands up and says we can't do this, not here in Canada, then do they go back to all the American hub cities that they turned down and see what they do? And if they're not going to be able to do it either, then it kind of puts a worry on, you know, where the NHL is actually going to play.
Yeah, I mean, there's potential for that, but I'm always going to look at just the relationship that hockey and Canada have. I mean, it's their sport.
But yeah, and also, like, I don't think they would have, like, made these hub cities, like a lot of Canadian, like, cities, I don't think they would have put those on the list if, you know, they felt like it was going to be a risk for them to just be like, yeah, nah, we're good.
Yeah, and I believe that's what they're looking at. They're looking at numbers, and you have to look at logistics, too, hotels and rinks. And now Edmonton is a little bit of a surprise because I obviously don't know the setup. And Edmonton, I've never been to Toronto either, but Toronto is obviously a major city, so they have the, you know, the downtown space, the hotels, the arena, practice rinks, things like that. So I would assume that Edmonton's going to be able to accommodate, otherwise we're not even having this conversation. But I go back to Vegas and how this, if you are the government in Las Vegas, then this is a major loss for you because you had two sports that were eyeing your city and they both fell through. And I know, and now you had that on top of, you couldn't have the draft this year because of COVID, and now you're not getting the hub cities because of COVID. I mean, it's not that they're going to operate at a loss, because we know Vegas is still doing well, but that still stinks for them from a sports standpoint of not being able to be a hub city for the NHL. Because, I mean, again, we've opened almost every show when we've talked about the subject and said they're a lock. I mean, if you, to use the betting analogy, I mean, they were a lock, and now you're all of a sudden sitting there trying to figure out how you lost your money.
Yeah,
because it's not happening.
See, I thought for the NBA's perspective, I thought the bubble in Vegas was a perfect opportunity for Vegas to kind of showcase that they can, you know, provide an NBA atmosphere. They do that with the Summer League already, but, you know, it's Summer League. It's, you know, a bunch of rookies and third-year players that are trying to improve. It's not like having a whole NBA team. It's not like having LeBron James in Vegas. So I thought this was the perfect opportunity for them in Vegas to be like, hey, you know, we might be ready for an NBA team. Like, we might be, you know, we can hold this. We can do this. And it kind of is like, I thought Vegas was a lock from the beginning. I didn't even think of Orlando. I thought Vegas NBA was a for sure thing, but it's the same thing with the NHL. They just kind of looked at it as like, look, this is not, you guys are not handling this situation very well. And Florida's not either. You know, I'm not going to let Florida off. Like, you know, I'm still worried about the NBA and their bubble situation because they're in Florida, and Florida's probably one of the top hotbeds for the virus at this point. So, you know, it sucks for Vegas. They still have the Raiders. you know, opening their season. Obviously, it's probably not going to be without fans, but they still have that to hold out for. And, you know, Vegas is still going to be Vegas. Vegas is still going to be the hot destination. Vegas still going to Vegas. And, you know, I think they're still going to get these big events. They're still probably going to get the NFL draft down the line. They're more than likely going to get another NBA All-Star game, you know, down the line. And they'll still have these big events, but they had an opportunity to have not only the NBA and the NHL all in their hub city, but now, you know, plans have changed. Card subject to change, as the WWE likes to say.
Yes. Nate from Nashville, since you're playing in Canada, play outdoors. Well, let's see. In Edmonton right now, it's 57 degrees. It looks like the highs for the next few days will be in the 70s. So, in Toronto, 84 degrees with a heat warning. So I'm going to say that's probably not going to happen, Nate. I like the suggestion, like the thought. But I think they're going to stay because it's a bubble. So you can stay indoors and keep it contained. So that's what I think they're going to do. But, yeah, Vegas loses out on being a hub city. But as I have said, Marquise, I am not going to just say, really be like, okay, well, they're going to Canada until Gary Bettman tells me that they're going to Canada.
Yeah, see, and that's kind of the mindset I had when it came to the NBA. Like, I was like, look, I don't know where they're going to play. I just want them to play. And I'll just kind of wait for an announcement to come. So we're playing this guessing game, and I know we're probably, you know, taking Vegas out of it, but Gary Bettman hasn't said anything about Vegas being out of it at all. So, you know, maybe they're still in the hunt. I don't know. But the way it's looking right now and the way Nevada's spiking with their numbers, it's not looking too hot for Vegas right now.
Until Uncle Gare speaks, I'm not going to believe anything. That's where I'm at. Bob McKenzie just putting out, Willie just sent this to us. It's quite possible if all continues to go well in their talks, the NHL and the NHLPA will today finalize and announce they've reached a tentative deal on phase 3 and 4 return to play protocols, CBA extension, transition rules, and critical dates calendar. So this could be a big day for the NHL. That coming from TSN's Bob McKenzie. When we come back, an asterisk. That's a word we've used a lot lately. I'll explain when we return here on The Rundown. Chase and Marquise, ESPN 102.5 The Game. RockNashville.com is your community resource page. Check it out for information around town, including Nashville's Good to Go initiative, CDC updates, ways to donate to Second Harvest Food Bank of Middle Tennessee to support their mission of feeding hungry people, as well as other ways to help the Middle Tennessee community. That's RockNashville.com. I wanted that one to play for a minute. That's old school Drew McIntyre, right?
Yeah,
there.
Yeah, man.
WWE champion.
There you go. I was going to give you a hint and just say it's a current superstar with an old theme.
The chosen one, yeah.
And he was Intercontinental Champion. You know, he was going to be the next big thing in wrestling, and then, you know,
right.
A lot's changed. Then he left, got bulked up. Looks completely different, and then now he's champion, and he's amazing.
You can't forget his wonderful run as a member of 3MB.
That is a great group, and all of them got bulked up except for Heath Slater.
Yeah,
which he might.
And Heath Slater is the only one that's not that wasn't a champion.
Hey, there's still time, man. He's got to do is leave and get bulked up because that's what both of them did.
I think they left him.
Yeah, they did leave him. But they left him. But if he comes back and he looks like Brock Lesnar, then he'll probably be champion. He'll be a redheaded Brock Lesnar. But, you know, he'll be champion. All you got to do is just bulk up because they like the guys to be beefy over there.
Yes, they do. So will the – and we've asked this, we've talked about this, any of the champions in the return to play scenarios, will they have an asterisk next to them? I thought this, you sent this to me this morning. This is a text message between Taylor Rooks and Austin Rivers. Austin Rivers says, quote, "I think whoever wins should have an asterisk next to it, but only for it being one of the toughest championships ever won. You're asking guys to take 3 to 4 months off, then come back and find chemistry, etc., then play during a pandemic while players are fighting for Black Lives Matter. There's a lot going on right now. Crazy times and a lot of worry. And during these times, players are leaving their families to go live in a locked down bubble. So for all these reasons and more, I think it will be one of the more tougher championships ever won. Only season ever like this ever. That's Austin Rivers. So what do you think about that? I think that's an interesting way to look at it from Austin Rivers' perspective, because this is going to be a season in any sport, even the NFL, if it goes off on time, that we're always going to refer to. Yeah, hey, remember the 2020 sports year? Remember when the NCAA tournament was canceled? Remember when Rudy Gobert shut down the NBA, or really all sports? Remember when NHL, you know, they came back with 24 teams, the NBA came back with 22 teams, the MLS did a tournament? Remember that? I mean, it's going to, there's going to be a movie made about sports in 2020. So I think he's onto something.
No, absolutely. I agree with Austin Rivers 100% on this, because when you look at now I think we've gotten as fans in the mindset of the what if a bad team wins, how would we feel about that? Like if the Suns were to win, or the Blackhawks were to win the Stanley Cup, or, you know, the Wizards would have went on and win the NBA Finals. I think we've gotten that mindset of like, well, it's going to be an asterisk because it's going to be like all these terrible teams are in the bubble too. It's not the teams that we all expected to be in it. It's teams we expected and also terrible teams. And what if they win? Like, you know, but it's what everything that Austin Rivers said, the distractions surrounding it, like you're in a bubble for 3 months to try to win a championship for your team. Not to mention you haven't been around these guys in probably 4 or 5 months. And then on top of that, you have to worry about your family and worried about how they're going through this virus. LeBron James has 3 kids and a wife. I'm pretty sure when he's down in Orlando, a lot of times he's going to be thinking about, are they staying healthy? Are they, you know, hopefully, you know, they stay in the house and they're social distancing and doing all these things. So you're worried about a lot of things going into this bubble. And not to mention the fact that, hey, I have a platform that I also want to use for the social issues that are going on. And so it's just, and then you're thinking in the back of your mind, is playing basketball the right thing with all these social issues going on right now? And so you have all this stuff going on in your mind, but you also have to play basketball. And you also have to play basketball for, you know, 60 minutes or 40 minutes at a time. So it's just, it's difficult. And it's going to be tough for these guys to, you know, mentally, like, every sport is a mental game too. It's not just physical. It's not like, oh, hopefully these players are in shape and working out. Like LeBron James is fine. I'm pretty sure Anthony Davis is fine. You know, I'm pretty sure Roman Josi looks fine. I'm pretty sure he doesn't look like us and have quarantine body. Like I'm almost certain that these players are, the physical part of these players are still intact, but it's the mental, because even every sport is mental at the end of the day. And when you have all this stuff going on to you, that's surrounding the world, social issues and a pandemic, how are you as a player going to be able to focus on a 40-minute game? And that's the challenge. So for any team that can go the distance for these next 3 months and win a championship, I say kudos to that. Kudos to that team.
Yeah, I and here's the other part of this. We always hear, okay, well, that championship has an asterisk, or that record has an asterisk. And sometimes the reason that it has it is because there was cheating or there was something involved. But what I will also say from the other side of that is, guess what, though? That championship that you put the asterisk next to, guess what that team gets? They still get the trophy. They still get the rings. They still get recognized as a champion. So if you put an asterisk next to something because it makes you feel better, to explain why this isn't a legitimate, if you want to call it that, championship, then whatever. Because in their mind it is. And I think Austin Rivers is completely onto something, that you do have to recognize the difficulty in trying to do this. Because we so often forget the professional athletes are people like you and me. They have families. They have their stuff they have to deal with at home. They're doing a job. Now, they get to play a game and make millions of dollars, and so I'm not saying anybody's necessarily feeling sorry for them, and I'm not asking you to. But you do have to recognize that they have lives outside of their sport that they have to worry about. Not only do they have to do that, but then they have to live with the fact that their lives are in public, that people can find out information about them that you don't really find out about you or I. And so that's a part of it. And so I understand. I'm glad that text got shared, because I think it gives you a different perspective on just what goes through the mind of a player, especially now as they get ready to play in the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah, and I also, I don't know if this is an unpopular sports opinion. It's probably in the middle. I hate people who put invisible asterisks under championships. I don't like those people. Like when the Warriors won the championship with Kevin Durant, oh, there's an asterisk on that championship because they had to sign Kevin Durant to do it. No. Yeah. Are you going to blame a team for having enough cap space to get the best player in the league? Like, no. Like, in cheating, like, you know, yeah, that's a different story. Like, are you the championship with, you know, with Spygate or Bountygate or Deflategate or whatever, you know? Yeah, but they still won a championship, you know, and it's funny because the game that they talk about with the deflated footballs was a game they destroyed the Colts in. Like, that was a domination. I don't think they needed deflated balls for them to beat the Colts that bad. So it's just all these invisible asterisks are just like who cares? They won a championship, man. Like, just like shortened seasons, whatever. Like, guess what? The Spurs won their first championship, the last championship under Dave Robinson. They won that in a lockout season, in a short season. And guess what? Nobody mentioned that. They just mentioned how many championships Tim Duncan has. Miami Heat's first championship was after a lockout season, you know, and it was a shortened season. Nobody cares. They beat the Thunder in the finals. That's all we know about. So it just doesn't matter, man. These invisible asterisks, like, you know, it's just, it's annoying. Like,
no,
you,
it is.
It's a personal thing. Like, people do that. Like, you know, oh, I don't think Kevin Durant deserves a ring. He has zero rings, in my opinion, because he had to go to a winning team. And like, don't you want to play for a winning team? Do you want to go to the Knicks and try to win a championship? You'll have gray hair before you're 30 before you do that. So it's just, stop putting invisible asterisks on things, please.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, you just have to recognize what they are. I joke sometimes about, I say, well, Henry Aaron is the home run king, and he's the one true king. That's the Braves fan coming out. I mean, yeah, there will always be an argument on Barry Bonds, and because of the steroids and all of that. And I recognize that. But I also recognize that it still happened, and so you need to put them in a, okay, well, it was a different era, and there was rampant steroid use, and some it was proven that they did it, and some it was, you know, it wasn't proven. And so that's just kind of how you have to look at things right now, with all of this. So I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't think it's a big deal.
Because basically what we're determining now is the team, this is a brand new season. Like, every time we start the playoffs, it's always a brand new season. That's the cliche sports, you know, coaching talk of, you know, we're on to a new season. This is the second season. It's the playoffs. And that's what we're in right now. So everybody, to me, in my mind, is 0-0. Every record to me is 0-0 at this point. Yeah, the Lakers are a one seed. You know, yeah, the Tampa Bay Lightning were really good and had a really good regular season. But guess what? It's 0-0 at this point. Every team has no wins and no losses. So we're all going through this with an equal playing field. It's all going to be a matter of who handles this situation the best. Which coach handles this situation the best? Which star player handles these situations the best? And that person's going to determine a champion. So in my opinion, that champion holds up. Because regardless of what happens.
When we come back, the preseason of the NFL, it appears, is going to be shorter. We will discuss that when we return here on The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. You can relive some great sports moments this 4th of July with 102.5 The Game on Saturday. You can catch some Preds classics from 9 to 11. We'll have the Preds versus Chicago from 2017, round 1, game 3. Following that, Preds versus St. Louis, 2017, round 2, game 6. And 1-3, a replay of Game 6 remastered, the 2017 Western Conference Final, Game 6 against the Anaheim Ducks. So be sure to check that out on Saturday here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in to the Rundown. Chase McCabe, Marquise Munson, hanging out with you. Ryan Porth on vacation this week. So the NFL, according to sources, Marquise, it looks like the preseason is going to be shortened. And I don't really think that this is a surprise with everything going on with COVID-19 and the pandemic. You know, right now it looks like the training camps are going to report on time, but that gives you time to quarantine your players, get everybody in their own little bubble, and then only play a couple of preseason games to get ready for the regular season. So, again, that doesn't really shock me all that much, but what does this mean for the players? Ryan Clark of ESPN, discuss how it affects and benefits the players.
It's going to be so much better to get those extra days of practice, extra days of conditioning. When you look at preseason games, they're usually very simple from a game plan standpoint. People don't necessarily get a ton of reps, at least the guys that are going to be playing once the regular season starts. And it's really kind of a wasted day for some of the veterans or some of the guys who are solidified in their spot. So to get an extra day of practice, an extra day of good on good, also an extra day in the classroom, really benefits the teams coming off of an offseason like this that we've just never had. The younger players, as far as, you know, the rookies and those guys, I think they'll pick it up fast. They'll make sure the rookies that need to play will get the reps that they need in order to be prepared for the regular season. And obviously the veterans, they don't necessarily learn on game day. And you take the offseason, they at least got the mental reps, and hopefully they were training throughout so they can be ready from a conditioning standpoint.
I've had coaches and former players always tell me that you get more out of practice than you do the games themselves. And I know that the preseason has been important. Those preseason games, especially that last preseason game or the early preseason games too, have been important to players that are on the bubble of making their team. I don't know if that really goes away, because veteran players will also tell you that they need one game and they're good to go. They're warmed up, because you get more out of practice, you get more out of those reps, you get more out of the classroom. So I don't think this is a big deal for what the product in the NFL is going to look like when it comes to the teams and not having as many preseason games. I mean, this is where this is going anyway.
No, absolutely. And I can see it going to two games, and the first game being where those veterans get in the game and kind of get back into football game shape. And then the second game kind of sitting out and letting the rookies, or letting, you know, the people who are fighting for roster spots, letting those guys play in that second game. So, look, I think every sport needs, obviously, a preseason. I feel like the NBA preseason is way too long. They have way too many games for the NBA preseason. I think you just make it, like, three or four in the NBA and just call it a day. Because half of the time, they don't even play. The only benefit for NBA, you know, preseason is they play in cities that they normally don't play in. Like, they play in, you know, like the Memphis team will go to Birmingham or something and play there and give fans an opportunity to see an NBA team that doesn't have an NBA team. And, you know, baseball, obviously spring training, and, you know, with hockey as well. So sometimes preseason is just pointless. It's just to get guys back into game shape and conditioning, but sometimes they're just too much. And it's a way to just, you know, milk out more games for TV time and you know, to get, you know, people who are itching for football back into shape. Because you got to think about it. College football players don't play preseason games. They have spring and fall camp. They have scrimmages in the spring, and then they do their fall practice. And then they're back at it, and they're ready to go. So maybe the NFL does a similar thing to where, look, maybe they just have, like, a full team scrimmage or – you know, maybe one preseason game, maybe two preseason games to kind of figure everything out. I think that's the better alternative than putting, you know, crappy preseason games on TV.
Mike Garafolo, who of course covers the NFL, he's with the NFL Network. He said that this plan has already been signed off by the PA, and the union may not want to play any preseason games at all.
Yeah, Yes, and the expectation was that the NFL would knock the preseason down from 4 games to 2 games. But that's got to be agreed upon with the NFL Players Association. The sides are working together on everything here, scheduling, protocol, anything they can do to get back to work to make sure that this thing runs as smoothly as possible. But here's the problem. The NFLPA has not signed off on the reduction from 4 games down to 2 games. And in fact, many in union leadership are talking amongst themselves right now and relaying this to the NFL that it might be best if they play 0 preseason games for this upcoming season. And the thought process is, according to sources informed of these discussions, both within the union and with the league, that we're going to try to get this thing as safe as we possibly can. 32 little bubbles that we're going to set up for training camp. Do we really then want to start mixing those bubbles for games that don't count in the standings? Now, the traditionalists in the NFL say we need these games. We need live reps. We need to be able to evaluate our roster. But the union is saying we want to give ourselves as much time as possible to get this thing under control and understand it as much as we possibly can in a scenario where the games are not going to factor into the standings. Look, when you get to the regular season, you're going to play week 1. You're going to have to mix these bubbles that we were talking about. But the thought process is, right now, at least on the player side, do we really want to do that for games that don't count in the standings?
Mike Garofolo of the NFL Network, and I set that up wrong. They haven't signed off on it yet, but as you just heard. So I think that one thing you can take away from that, Marquise, is the players, and we've known this for a while, it's not the players that need the preseason, it's the coaches. The coaches want to evaluate, and the front office, they want to evaluate. The players could do without it altogether, just because it's more wear and tear on their bodies and just something that they don't make a lot of money on, and so I understand that. So where do we think this is going? Do we think that it's going to be shortened to 2, that the players are going to sign off on that, or are they just going to scrap it all together?
I think it goes down to 2. That's my opinion. I think, because I still think about, like, and you, we talked to Derek Mason and how he needed that preseason game to kind of make a roster and to show and prove and what he can do. And I think about guys like Juwan Jennings, who got drafted late, and those guys who needs those game reps and need that NFL game experience to start the season in order to kind of get a feel for, you know, their roster and their team. And yeah, maybe you can do that in scrimmages like college football, but I think playing another team, playing guys that are not on your team, guys that you're probably going to be seeing on Sundays anyway, I think that's better for them than playing against your team. So I think they just do 2 preseason games and just call it a day, which it should have been cut down to 2 from begin with anyway. But I think just 2 games where you have, you know, the veterans play the first half of that first preseason game like they normally do, and then they just don't play anymore. And then that second half and then that last game can just be guys that, you know, need the reps and you guys that you feel like you need to evaluate still. So I think they just cut it down to 2.
Yeah, I mean, that would be the most logical thing to do, is just to cut it down to 2. But it's just something that...
Logic's not happening right now.
You know, right. Yeah. It's really hard to have logic. And player safety and the safety of the staff and everything, I mean, that has to be the utmost importance, not playing football. So at the end of the day, if they don't feel like it's safe, they're not going to play football. That's just the bottom line in all of that. Garofolo goes on to say on a possible... He talks about a possible reduction in training camp rosters and how the biggest thing, as we were saying, for the PA is player safety.
There are players who are not going to be able to play themselves into jobs. I mean, look, we may see a reduction in training camp rosters altogether with 90 down to 75 or whatever it might wind up being, but the NFLPA is looking at this saying we've got to make the smartest decision for the health of our players overall. Now, they have a conference call with their board of player reps on Thursday to discuss the issue, and then a call with all players on Friday to further discuss it. And they've been clear, the union has, over the last couple of days, maybe the last week or so, that the biggest thing for them is player safety. That, as union president J.C. Treader wrote, quote, "We are not invincible. We have players with underlying risks, as the CDC outlines those. So we want to make sure that we are keeping our players as safe as possible. And if you bring 2 teams together for a preseason game, there's a potential that they could share the virus. Now, all of a sudden, you've got two teams that are affected by it, and now that might threaten the regular season. That is the thought process behind the union and the players thinking long and hard about whether they want to play any preseason games. So stay tuned on this one. This issue is far from resolved.
Mike Garofolo from the NFL Network. Yeah, there are going to be other issues that pop up. I mean, we've seen this in other leagues. They're going to have to work through this as they go. My hope is that it doesn't become contentious like it did in baseball, that they're able to maybe not agree on everything, maybe have some hiccups every now and then, but it ultimately get an agreement in place and all be on the same page, knowing that there's a lot more going on here, and so be able to work that out. That's my hope with the NFL and the NFLPA. I mean, they've worked, you know, for the most part, lately they've worked well together, so I don't see any reason why there won't be some sort of resolution to all of this. But it's going to be interesting to me to see if they end up having a preseason at all. Because you say two, and I understand why you say two, and I agree with you right now, but I wouldn't be surprised.
So for you, what would be ideal? Like, if I were to give you this decision right now, if Chase, you have to come up with the preseason plan for the NFL, what would yours be?
You report to training camp on time. You have two extra weeks of just practice and meeting time and not having to worry about a game or travel. Plus, that gives you 2 weeks to be in the bubble, to be in the Titan bubble or the Cowboy bubble or whatever. So to be in that, and then you play two preseason games leading up to kick off the regular season.
I like it.
That would be the perfect plan, in my opinion.
The alternative, if not two games, if they don't do preseason, is just obviously to just do what college does and then have these, like, fall camps, quote unquote, and use, like, because I know for, you know, when I covered Alabama, I know that they had, like, practice throughout the week, and then on Saturdays they would do full game style scrimmages amongst their own team. So maybe you do that if you just can the whole preseason.
Yep. So just another thing for us to add to the list of we will monitor.
It's questions. It's all. We have more questions than we have answers. We just, all of this whole time have just been speculating on what we think they would do. And 9 times out of 10, it's probably what they're not going to do. Because, like, even with the NBA, I was like, oh, they're just going to go 16 teams and go straight to the playoffs. Nah, we're going to do 24 teams. We're going to do 13 and 9. And then we're going to do 8-9 seed possibly playing in a play-in tournament. And I was like, wait, I didn't. Those are ideas that I had no idea about. And same thing for the NHL. So it's just, all of this is just a guessing game, and then until they actually give us answers of what it's actually going to be.
When we come back, what if? I'll leave it at that. I'll explain when we return. The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Stream 102.5 The Game from anywhere. Download the Game Nashville app. Enable our Alexa skill or Google Home and ask to play 102.5 The Game or live stream from our website, TheGameNashville.com. Welcome back into the Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. So, Marquise, what if? And I know this. You saw this story a couple days ago, and we haven't gotten to it. But I thought it was an interesting question to bring up, because there was a report that LeBron, when he left Cleveland before the, because you know they had the anniversary of the decision and all of that, when he left Cleveland, that he almost went to the Knicks. That it looked like it was going to be the Knicks, and then it fell through. So what would have happened if he had gone to the New York Knicks? Would he have won a championship with them? And then we'll add another caveat to it in just a second. But what do you think about that?
Yeah, I love playing these what if games, because, like, you just never know. Like, if a player goes here, does this whole thing change? Does this whole league that we're looking at right now, does it look the same or does it look different? So LeBron James almost, like, and this was according to the Bill Simmons podcast, of that he almost went to the New York Knicks, but their meeting was just awful. They were just unprepared. They, you know, James Dolan, obviously, he was probably more focused on his little group that he has, his little record. But, you know, it was bad. And so LeBron ended up choosing Miami instead. But what if LeBron would have went to the Knicks? What if that meeting wasn't as bad as James Dolan set it up to be? What if it was good? What if it was good to LeBron and be like, you know what? This is where I'm going to go. And I think this is what would have happened. And I'm going to keep it short and sweet. LeBron basically would have built his own big three, but it wouldn't have been with D-Wade and Chris Bosh. Now, to explain, so basically after LeBron and those three got together, the Knicks were desperate at this point, and they needed somebody. So then they end up trading and they sign and trade for Amari Stoudemire from the Phoenix Suns. So Amari Stoudemire end up going to the Knicks for $99 million, which is almost around the same amount that Chris Bosh got. So if you sign LeBron James, you can still do that sign and trade with Amari Stoudemire, and then you team up Amari Stoudemire with LeBron James. Now, also in that same season, Carmelo Anthony was traded to the New York Knicks, him and Chauncey Billups for Wilson Chandler and Gallinari and a couple of other guys and pieces, Raymond Felton. So Chauncey Billups and Carmelo Anthony would end up going to the Knicks. So now you have a Knicks team that has LeBron James, Amari Stoudemire, Chauncey Billups, and Carmelo Anthony. So that's your core four. Because Miami Heat's core four, when they their first season they got together, was LeBron James, D. Wade, Chris Bosh, and Mike Bibby. Who Mike Bibby was awful. Mike Bibby averaged single digits that season. LeBron James, Chris Bosh, and D. Wade all averaged 20. The next person averaged 9.8. And that was Mike Bibby. Instead, you get a LeBron James who can average 20. You get Carmelo who can average 20. You got Amari Stoudemire who that season averaged 20. And then you had Chauncey Billups at the time who was averaging 17 points. I'm not taking health in consideration because obviously, you know, you may never know. Hopefully Derrick Rose never blows out his knee, you know, and he still stays an MVP caliber player. But I think that team right there would have won a championship over the Dallas Mavericks, even though that team has no defense at all. That team sucks defensively. Like, Carmelo Anthony's probably one of the most laziest defenders I've ever seen play basketball. One of the. So I think it would have been tougher, but I think they would have still won maybe that season against the Mavs, or they would have lost to the Bulls that year, and then the Bulls would have beat the Mavs, and the Bulls would have won the championship. And if LeBron didn't win that year, he would have won the following year with the same pieces, with an addition of one more person instead of Chauncey Billups. It would have been Jeremy Lin. There you go.
Wow,
Jeremy Lin.
You really broke this down.
Yeah, thank you. But it's basically all it, because when I was dissecting it, I was like, hold on, it's basically just the big three. But with just different people. You're replacing D-Wade with Carmelo Anthony, and you're replacing Chris Bosh with Amari Stoudemire, which both are pretty much debatable. Like, D-Wade, to me, is a better all-around player than Carmelo Anthony by landslide, but Carmelo Anthony is a, you know, 20-time better scorer than D-Wade. Yeah. I think Carmelo Anthony is one of the most underrated scorers in the NBA. And when you look at Chris Bosh and Amari Stoudemire, and you kind of compare those two, then I look at it as, well, Amari Stoudemire in his prime and when healthy was pretty dominant. I mean, he was pretty dominant. Him and Steve Nash, they ran that Suns team. They're pretty dominant. Chris Bosh is good. I think he's better and a little bit more talented than Amari Stoudemire, but Amari Stoudemire in his prime was pretty damn good. So, and then Chauncey Billups. I mean, Chauncey Billups was at that point a way better option than Mike Bibby.
Yeah.
Way better. So, and then even if you don't, you got Jeremy Lin, who eventually Linsanity came. So there you go. And then they also had Tyson Chandler that following year, and Tyson Chandler averaged like 17 points. So LeBron James would have still won a championship. It would have been a little bit harder because he would have had to play a little bit better defense, but I think they still would have won. The Knicks would have been a champion at this point.
So about 2 years after LeBron goes to Miami, there's another decision that there's no TV special with it, but there's another decision. The Indianapolis Colts release Peyton Manning. We know what happened. He ends up going to Denver, and he wins a Super Bowl in his last year, even though the defense really won it for him, played in a Super Bowl and they lost to Seattle. So the other team that was a part of that discussion, and if you've listened to the station long enough, Darren McFarland will tell you that it was never in consideration, that it was a courtesy visit. But the fact of the matter remains, he still met with the Tennessee Titans. So what if he had signed with the Tennessee Titans? Would the Titans have won a Super Bowl under Peyton Manning? Would they have played in two and won one? Would they have won more than one? What do we think about that? And I look back on it, and ultimately, I do weigh this, that Denver had a better roster. They just did. And at the time, that just was the better fit for him because they had a better overall roster than the Titans. The Titans were still trying to rebuild things, and this was after the Floyd Reese era. This was after the Jeff Fisher era. Mike Munchak was the head coach. Mike Reinfeldt was the general manager of the team at the time. They had Chris Johnson, but they weren't the same Titans that they had been a few years earlier. They were still in that transition phase. So even adding Peyton Manning to this team, while it would have made them better, I don't know if it makes them Super Bowl worthy, which is ultimately why I think he chose Denver. So I really don't. I don't know if they would have won, even with Peyton Manning. Now,
yeah.
You can also argue that, all right, you get Peyton Manning, you're gonna be able to lure bigger free agents and build your team around him, and the process would be easier. Sure, I understand that, but I don't know if it would have led to a Super Bowl right away.
Yeah, because when you look at that season, didn't the Titans like lose in like overtime games and like 3-point yeah. games? And so a lot of that would be swung the other way because obviously you have Peyton Manning, but like who was the top defensive player on that team that year?
Man.
Because Von Miller played a big part in that Broncos championship.
Sure.
So who would be the Von Miller of the Titans? See, so, you know.
Probably Casey?
It may be. See, it would have been Casey. So then you got to compare, is Casey a better player than Von Miller or more, you know, game changer than Von Miller was? And then Thomas was the top wide receiver for the Broncos. And, you know.
This is what he would have played with. So Chris Johnson, Kenny Britt, Nate Washington, Craig Stevens was here. The offensive line wasn't bad. You had Michael Roos, Steve Hutchinson was here for a year. Fernando Velasco, wow. Leroy Harris, Big Country, Dave Stewart. On defense, you had Derek Morganson, Derek Marks, Jarrell Casey, Akeem Ayers, Colin. I mean, it wasn't very good. So I don't think that it would have happened. That was also Jake Locker's first year as a starter for the Titans. So,
good times.
Good times to play the what-if game. But that's going to do it for the rundown today. Darren Donick and Chase. Darren McFarland still on vacation. That's coming up next here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.